Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is October the 21st. We are in Shrei Asar and we are in Zechariah. And we are up to Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13. Continuing with a discussion about the future. As with all discussions of the future, we don't know exactly when, how it's going to happen, but we get a general picture, and the exact sequence of events between what we have in Zechariah, what we have in Yechezkel, what we have in Yeshaya, the various places, the exact sequence of events, we're only going to know after it happens. But we get at least some sense of what's going to happen. So, the Navi says, "Bayomahu, on that day, yem makar niftach leves David uliyoshvei Yerushalayim. On that day, there will be a source opened up for the house of David and for those who dwell in Yerushalayim, lechatas ulenida. Now, literally, this would mean for chatas, which means sin, and nida seems to refer to a woman who is tameh." So that's not how it is translated, as we'll say in a moment. But what does makar niftach mean? A source that is opened. So our sages tell us, Chazal tell us, that in the future, whenever that happens, when Mashiach comes or after Mashiach comes, there will be an opening of the presence of Hashem, which means that we, people, will have greater access to the presence of the Shekhinah of Hashem, and therefore all things ruchnias, all things that are spiritual, will be more accessible to people. And so those who are trying to access Torah, trying to access Hashem, trying to access ruchnias, will have a much easier time doing so. And that's what it means, a makar niftach, an open source. It'll be there for people who want it. Now, a person who wants to reject it will still be able to reject it, as we will see in a moment. It's not like it'll be impossible to do any sins, but anybody who is seeking will have a much easier time accessing once this future time comes.
Do you remember the one that told us that everything's like in a balance? So that's why we had to do away with the Nevi'im, so we would do away with the Bodhisattva. So forgetting this increased sight of Hashem or His essence, what are we getting on the other side?
That's a good question. I don't know if the balance carries forward once this future time comes or not. If it does, then you're right, there's going to have to be some offsetting thing, which I don't know what it is. It could be things like the War of Gog and Magog, maybe, but again, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to follow the same pattern. It's a good question. So, what does it mean then that it'll be open source for the house of David and those who dwell in Yerushalayim? L'chatas ulenida. So, Chazal tell us that this is not referring to what it seems, chatas ulenida. Rather, it's referring to the parah aduma, to the red heifer. Chatas refers to the ashes of the red heifer, of the parah aduma, and nida refers to the water that is mixed with it. As you know, that the way that the parah aduma works is they take the cow and they slaughter it, and then they burn it, and then the ashes of the parah aduma are mixed with water, and that mixture is then sprinkled on anybody who needs it to become tahar. So the word chatas and the word nida are both found in Parshas Chukas when the Torah discusses the parah aduma. Chatas, although it seems to mean sin, can also mean purify. Lechatei means to purify in a verb form. And one, of course, can think about why would the same root mean to sin and to purify? But you find that sometimes the same root can mean its opposite. And the word nida, over there in Parshas Chukas, it says that the water will be lemei nida. So what does it mean, mei nida, water of nida? So The word, the root of the word nida, nun dalid, we actually had in last week's parasha, Parashas Bereishis. Kayin says to Hashem, Hashem says to Kayin actually, nava nod tiev aretz, which means you're going to have to constantly move around. Linadeid means to move. That's what the word means. So Kayin was punished that he was not able to stay in one place, that he would have to constantly move. And that was the punishment for killing Hevel. So the word really means to move, as in to switch one's place. That's literally what it means. So since the water of the Paraduma and the ashes are thrown or sprinkled on a person or on whatever is tamei, so it needs to be thrown or moved, that's why the same verb is used to mean that. And it's not, this is not the only, as I said, it's not here that this is the only place it's used. In the parasha of Paraduma itself, this same word is used to refer to the water. So what it means then is that there'll be a source that will open up in the future, which will be similar, as Rashi explains and the Targum explains, to the purification of a Paraduma. That's going to be the analogy for what will happen in the future. Pasuk Beis, v'haya b'yom ahu, will be on that day, Nu'um Hashem Tzvakos, Hashem says, Achris es shmos ha'atzabim min ha'aretz, I will cut off the names of the atzabim, which would be the idolaters, from the land, v'lo yizachru od, they will not be remembered anymore, v'games ha'nevim v'esruach ha'tuma avir min ha'aretz, and also the prophets, this means the false prophets, and the Ruach HaTumah, the impure spirit, I'll remove from the land. So there'll be, from Pasuk Aleph, we're saying that there's going to be this surge of purity for those who want it. And then at the same time, there'll be a force that will push out those who are trying to be impure. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, V'hayaki Navei Ish Od. And it will be when any man prophesizes again. This means false prophecy. Va'amru a love avivi imo yoledav, and his father and his mother, those who brought him into this world, will say to him, lo sichye, you will not live. Ki sheker dibarto b'shem Hashem, because you spoke falsehood in the name of Hashem, udikaruhu, and they will run him through. Lidkor means to take a spear and to stab somebody. Avihu v'imo, his father and his mother, Yoledav, those who brought him into this world, Behinav O, when he prophesizes falsely. So this is a shocking pasuk, as it's saying that the power of the connection to Hashem will be so strong that if there is a situation where there's a false prophet who's still rejecting, as we said, he's not going to be forced to accept Hashem. If he wants to reject, he'll still be able to reject. So he'll be rejecting Hashem, but his parents are seeking Hashem. That connection the parents will have to Hashem will be so strong, it will override their natural love for their child, and they themselves will be willing to kill him for his Avera. Now this is an Avera for which one gets killed, to prophesy falsely. But the shocking thing is that the parents will have the ability to do that. Now we find this in the Chumash already, that we find that with the Egel Hazav, the golden calf, that the B'nai Levi were willing to even kill their own relatives if the relatives are the ones who worshipped the golden calf. Both Yaakov Avinu in his bracha and Moshe Rabbeinu in his bracha. Yaakov Avinu does not say it. It's mentioned in Parashas Kisisa when it actually happens, when the Bnei Levi carry out the executions of those who worship the golden calf. And then Moshe Rabbeinu mentions it specifically in Parashas Vezos HaBracha, which we read on Simchas Torah, about Levi, that Ha'omer la'aviv ulimo lo re'isiv, that he says about his father and his mother, that I didn't see him. Ulechav vesachav lo hikir. He doesn't recognize his brother. His brother is vespanav lo yadai. He doesn't recognize his children. That the B'nai Levi were willing to kill even their own relatives if they deserved to be killed. As Rashi explains over there, how would that be if all of the Shevet Levi did not worship the golden calf? Then what relatives would there be for the B'nai Levi to kill? They all were faithful.
Their daughters and sisters.
Okay, so well, the daughters are also from Levi. But it would
but
be...
the daughters have married...
Okay, right. So it would be the relatives that come through marriage. But not non-blood relatives, because that's not really relatives. It means a blood relative who is not a Levi. So, for example, if a Levi marries the... if a Levi marries a woman who is not from a Levi, so her father is a blood relative of hers, but he's not a Levi. And similarly, if a Levi's daughter marries a non-Levi, so then their child is a Levi's grandchild, but not a Levi. Because you follow the father for which tribe you're from. So the Levim were willing to do it. It doesn't matter if they actually did it or not. The fact is that the Torah tells us they were willing to do it. They were ready and willing to do it. Had it been necessary, they would have done it. That was how strong their conviction was to Hashem. So it seems that in the future, that this conviction and connection to Hashem will be so strong that it will affect everybody. Anybody who's seeking Hashem, not just those from Levi, but all of us will have that same conviction. And it's not that we're going to love our relatives less. It's that the love for Hashem will be so intense, it will override the natural emotions that parents have for their child. And if the child deserves to be killed, the parents will be willing to do it for the sake of Hashem. Which is a very, very powerful thing, which of course is very difficult for us to relate to and to think about. It seems almost cruel. How could it happen? But that's only because we can't imagine that kind of intense love for Hashem, that it would supersede the love for one's own flesh and blood. And this case seems to even exceed the case of Levi, because in the case of Levi, it seems that only the men carried out the punishment. It doesn't say anything about the women over there, and that would be natural. After all, it is the men who normally go to war, it's the men who normally would wield the sword, so therefore it's the men who seem to have been willing to even kill their own relatives. But here it says specifically, even the mother will be willing to do it if it's warranted. So that's how powerful the love for Hashem be for the future. The way I took this when I read it is not so much the focus on the killing, but to focus on the how intense the love would be. To imagine loving Hashem so much that it would override the love that one would have for any of their own blood relatives. It's a very, very powerful thing to think about. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. V'ayah b'yom ahu, be on that day, yevoshu hanavim ish mechez yono b'hinav oso. The false prophets will be shamed, each man from his vision, that when he says it. V'lo yilbishu aderes se'or l'man kachesh. They will no longer wear an aderes is a cloak. Se'or means hair, but there was a special cloak that they would wear, like when they would prophesy. The cloak would be made of various types of animal hides, and they will no longer wear those cloaks in order to kachesh. Kachesh means to fool or to lie or to be deceitful. They will no longer do that because they will be ashamed.
They're going to be ashamed anyway. Why do you have to kill them?
Well, I would imagine we're talking about two different levels. That the ones that are really trying to push it, they're going to have to be killed, and the ones who are going to give up are the ones who are going to go do teshuva. They won't have to be killed.
But didn't we say in the verse before that the false prophets were going to be purged?
Right. So I think it's going to be, it sounds to me that there's going to be different levels. Like with everything, even with the Egel Hazav, there were different levels. There were those who were killed and those who, you know, were not killed by man, those who did tshuva. You know, I think they'll just have a range of what's going to happen then. Just like today, you always have a range. So the Amar, Pasakein, he'll say, Lo Navi Anochi, I am not a prophet. Meaning he'll admit the truth, I'm not a prophet. Ish oved adama anochi, I am a man who works the ground. Ki adam hiknani minu urai, for a man I have been shepherding from my young age. Hiknani comes from the word mikna, which means cattle. So that I've dealt with cattle from my young age. So this is actually very interesting the way it says it. He'll say, I am a man who works the ground. Oved adama anochi. In this week's Parsha, Parshas Noach, after the Mabul, it says, Vayochal Noach ish ha'adama. And Noach, the man of the ground, began and he planted a vineyard in the story with the vineyard and getting drunk. So he's called ish ha'adama, the man of the ground. Now Rashi there says that the simple meaning over there is that he is the man, like the owner of the ground. Because after all, Noach essentially owned the whole world. He had three sons, but they're his children, so he's in charge. So once the Mabul was over, everything is really his. So he's Ish HaAdama, he's in charge of the ground, of the land. Here it says, Ish oved adama anochi, a man that serves the ground. The intent over here of the Navi is to say, I'm not a Navi. I'm a false prophet. I'm not really a prophet. I am instead a man who works the ground. Why does it have to be I'm a man that works the ground? Just say, I'm not a prophet. Which is what he wants to say over here. So, this false prophet is saying, I'm not a man who work. I am not a false prophet. Which, what was the draw to fake being a prophet? Because it was a very respectable thing. You were held in a very high esteem, wearing this special cloak, and you were held up as one of the top people in society if you could pass yourself off as being a prophet. So he says, no. He was going to reject it. I'm not a prophet, but he's willing to say, I am simply a worker of the land. Meaning, he repudiates not only being a prophet, but even any honor that comes with it. He repudiates that as well. It says, I'm just a worker of the land. We've mentioned before that the word adama, many of the Mefarshim say, the word Adama, which means land, and we know Adam, Harishon, is called Adam, because it comes from the Adama. That's where the word means, really, land. But which reminds us that we come from dirt. As Hashem says to Adam Harishon, Ki afar ata, you are dust. Ve'al afar tashuv, you will return to the dust. And that's a very powerful way of remembering our humility, remembering where we come from. At the same time, the word Adama, if you use different vowels, can be Adame. Adame means I will be similar to. I will emulate. I will seek to be like Adame. And there's a pasuk that says Adame le'elyon. I'll be similar to the one above, to Hashem. And therefore, the word Adama, it implies being like dust, like dirt, but it also implies the power of being godlike, being like Hashem, Adama. Now, in that pasuk, Adama le'elyon, it's used in a negative sense. It's I believe Nebuchadnezzar trying to say that I am like God Himself in His arrogance. But in a more positive light, the idea is that we human beings have the capacity to raise to ourselves to very lofty heights and be godlike, to emulate and copy Hashem. So this person who was a false prophet and is repudiating that, he's saying, I am a man that serves the ground. I'm willing to lower myself, give up all that honor, and just serve the ground, to be like the ground that I came from. Therein lies his ability to not only repudiate where his falsehood, but to actually raise himself to real heights, not the fake heights that he was passing himself off as before, but he could really raise himself up by being Adam El Elyon, to being like Hashem. And then Ki Adam Hiknani Minurai, again the reference to Adam, for as a man I have shepherded from my youth. So again, he's saying, I'm just a shepherd, I'm just a farmer, I'm just a shepherd, nothing special. But the reference to Adama and to Adam. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, V'amai lav, they will say to him, or he will say to him, Maha makosa ela bein yadecha, what are these wounds that are between your arms, means between your shoulders, like on the back. What are these wounds? You say that, you know, you're not a false prophet, you're not, well, then what are these wounds? V'amar, you will say, Ashehu kesi beis me'ahavai, that I was struck in the house of the one who loves me. He's going to say, when he's questioned about his wounds that he will have sustained in the punishments that Hashem will have given him, he will say, I got those wounds in the house of the one who loves me. So not only will he be able to give up his falsehood, not only will he be able to give up his honor and be able to say, I'm just a lowly person, he will even be able to recognize that the punishments that he sustained were really out of love from Hashem. So this completes the picture of the person who was a false prophet, but then gives it up in the face of the recognition of Hashem. The ones who don't give it up, they will end up being killed, even by their own parents. But the one who gives it up, so you would think, okay, he gives it up, and now he's just nothing. But no, he gives it up, he gives up the Avera, which is being a false prophet, he gives up the false honor, and then he's even willing and able to say that which hit me and hurt me was being done out of love by Hashem for my own good, which is something which is I want to say it's impossible, but it is extremely difficult for a person to be able to say. Normally when chas v'shalom a person is hurt or in pain, we don't want the pain, we ask why, and we intellectually know it's for our good, but to really feel that, to really believe that, is very difficult. And in the future, this shefa, this overwhelming presence of Hashem will enable those who want to seek Hashem and even to recognize that the punishments were for their good and to say they came out of love. Which of course changes the entire perspective a person has on a punishment if they see that it's really out of love.
I know that you said that about the Adam and Adam coming next. To me, it's like they've got a reset button and they're back to being Adam right after he was kicked out of Gan Eden,
uh-huh.
Where he has to work the land and that was the punishment he was given.
Uh-huh.
And that he realizes the punishment was the right one. He's not angry with God when he's kicked out.
Very good.
And he said that was, so to me it's like a reset button that they get a second chance.
Very good. Very good. Very good. And that would emphasize that we're talking about a person here who is willing to redo himself as opposed to those who are holding on to their...
himself. Yeah. The key is the work.
Yeah, yeah. Very nice. Very good. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Cherev uri al roi v'al gever amisi. The sword should awaken on my shepherd, on the man that is, literally is, I guess, my friend or my colleague. Num Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem. Now that clearly needs understanding. What do you mean my colleague? Hashem doesn't have any colleagues. Hach es haroeh, strike the shepherd usifutsena hatzon, and the sheep will be scattered. Vashivosi yadi al hatzoarim, and my hand will come down upon those who are causing the troubles, causing the pain. So the Targum and Rashi here understand this pasuk to be a general pasuk referring to the nations of the world that were until this point giving us Jews a lot of trouble, acting as the agents of Hashem in punishing the Jewish people, and that's why they're referred to as my shepherd, my colleague, but not really, just that Hashem had been using them as agents, but they were using their own free will as well, and therefore now they're going to get their due. They will be struck, the sheep, which means those who they lead will be scattered, and I will come down very hard on them. And that fits the general flow of this prophecy. There is a broader medrash here, which does not fit into the flow of the psukim. In other words, the medrash takes the pasuk out of context, and there's several medrashim that echo the same idea, that this pasuk is also a remez, it's a hint to the first two of the Asara Haruge Malchus, the first two of the 10 martyrs. The first two were Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol. Those were the first two. We just read about them on Yom Kippur. And that they would be Roi, my shepherd, and Gevra Amisi, my colleague. My shepherd being Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who was the Nasi. So he was the leader, and he shepherded the Jewish people. And Gevra Misi, the man of my colleague, that would refer to the Kohen Gadol, who is, so to speak, the colleague of Hashem, and that they were struck down. Hach es haroa usufutzena hatzon, strike the shepherd, and the sheep will have to scatter, and I bring my hand down on those who cause the pain. So that that they were killed is the first two of the 10 martyrs. The medrash that says this on this pasuk goes on to say how the malachim, when they were killed, particularly when Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol was killed, and he was killed in such a gruesome way because the daughter of the king, that she wanted him to stay alive because of his beauty, and he wouldn't allow it, so they took the skin off his face. So when that happens, the malachim say, Zo Torah v'zu schara, this is Torah, this is its reward. They say to Hashem, and Hashem says, it's a gzera milafanai, this is what I decreed, and you have to accept it, and this is the way it's going to be. So we don't understand why something like this would happen. It's the classic question of a bad thing happening, or a very bad thing happening to a very good person. And we don't understand it. So that is all packed in to this pasuk. It seems to me that even though that's out of context, which happens sometimes, that Midrashim will take a pasuk out of context and say this has another meaning which has nothing to do with the context that it's in over here. But it seems to me that the reason why this is being brought up over here is because there will be much more understanding in the future. Once the floodgates are open with the presence of Hashem, we will understand things a lot better. And just as the person in the previous pasuk will be able to say, I recognize that the punishments were really out of love, which is such a difficult thing to recognize, that we too will have a better perspective on these very, very difficult questions. Right now, we have to say, it's a gzera from Hashem, we don't understand it, this is what Hashem decided. Even the malachim didn't understand it. They themselves were told by Hashem, you need to be quiet, this is my gzera, this is my decree, and this is what it is. So if they can't understand it, what hope do we have? But when Hashem's presence is more accessible, then even we will have a better understanding. Will we understand it fully? I don't know. but there'll be a better understanding, and we can be sure that those, I don't want to call them philosophical issues, but those things that really trouble us, and who doesn't have something that troubles them in this world? We whenever we have these sort of things that really, really trouble us, so because we're God-fearing and because we know intellectually there is an answer, even if we're not big enough to understand it, we're just lowly people, so we compartmentalize it in our minds. Okay, this is something I don't understand. And we accept the fact that we don't understand, which is that's a huge level in emunah, in our belief in Hashem. It's something a person gets a lot of reward for, to be able to say, I don't understand it, I know if I grapple with it, it will only make me more upset, and therefore I'm going to put it aside and say, okay, I don't understand it, but that doesn't undermine my faith, it doesn't undermine my life direction, it doesn't undermine the fact that I know that Hashem loves me, even though I don't understand this. That's what we tend to do. In the future, because of the accessibility that there'll be for Hashem, then these things will become, if not totally answered, but much easier to deal with. We'll have a much better understanding of that which is right now almost impossible to grapple with. It reminds me that I've told you this before, that I was once with a group with the Rosh Yeshiva, with Rav Weinberg, Zichrono Livracha, and he was discussing bad things in this world, and he said that the reason why the bracha, he's talking about the bracha that is said on bad things today, is Baruch Dayan HaEmes. That's the bracha that's recited when a person loses a loved one, God forbid. So Baruch Dayan HaEmes, the true judge. And when good things happen, the bracha is Baruch HaTov VeHameitiv. So he said that in this world we have two different brachos, but the Gemara tells us that in the next world, meaning after Mashiach comes, everything will be Baruch HaTov VeHameitiv. Even things that are, so to speak, bad, we will be able to say Baruch HaTov VeHameitiv. So he said that in this world, as things are now, it's impossible to see the good. We may intellectually believe that it's good, but it's impossible to see it, so we have a bracha of Dayan HaEmes. But in the future, then we'll be able to see the good, even what appears now to be bad. So what struck me about that conversation, the reason why I remember it, is because after he said that, so one of the members of the group there wanted to ask a question about what the Rosh Yeshiva had just said. So as often happens when you ask a question, you kind of repeat what the teacher just said, and then you're setting up your own question. So the way the person said it was, he said, well, the Rosh Yeshiva just said that in this world, it's almost impossible to see the good when something bad happens. So before he could get to his question, the Rosh Yeshiva interrupted him and said, he said, so the Rosh Yeshiva said that it's very difficult to see the good. But before he could get to his question, the Rosh Yeshiva interrupted him and said, I didn't say very difficult. I said impossible. So there is, even if a person does have a better perspective and is able to deal with something, but the fact is there's always an element of it that's impossible in our limited perspective that we are in this world. And it's not, a person is not falling short. A person is not a bad person if they say, I know intellectually there's something good about this, but I can't possibly fathom what it is, and it hurts. And it hurts. And I can't get past that hurt. It hurts. That doesn't make a person a non-believer. It doesn't make a person a bad person. It doesn't mean a person has bad emunah. It means we are living in this world. And in this world, our perspective is very limited. And oftentimes, as the Rosh Yeshiva said, it's impossible to get past that something is bad. It feels bad, even though we know it might be good, but it feels bad and we can't get past that feeling. But in the future, when Hashem's presence will be so powerful and so accessible, then we'll be able to access the real good in all of it. And we'd be able to say HaTov HaMeitiv instead of Dayan HaEmes.
This to me makes perfect sense, because Mashiach, who's supposed to be the one that heralds the Mashiach right at the end of times. And we have the story where the rabbi follows Eliyahu, who's not allowed to ask
very
questions.
Good. Yeah.
And Eliyahu explains to him how it's all good in the end.
After the fact.
It doesn't look that way to the rabbi. So if he's the one that really knows how to explain why it's all good, and he's the one heralding the end of times, then it makes sense that we'll be able to understand it better.
Very good. Very good. That's a very good through. Yeah. I believe it was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi who was with Eliyahu HaNavi. Yeah. Yeah. It just means that Eliyahu HaNavi has a broader picture of things right now, even before the coming of Mashiach. Right. Very nice. Very good. Pasuk Ches verse 8. V'hayah v'chol ha'aretz num Hashem pishnayim ba yikarsu yigvo. And it will be in all the land, says Hashem, that two parts will be cut off, they will be killed. Vashlishis yivaser ba, and the third will remain. So it seems that the Pasuk is saying two-thirds of the world will be cut off, and one-third will survive. That's what it seems like it's saying, which means that two-thirds, it seems, of humanity will be cut off, and one-third will survive. The Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin says the word v'hashlishis, instead of just v'hashlishi, shlishi means a third, but the extra tough v'hashlishis implies more than one-third, meaning a third and a third, so that it won't be that one-third will survive, but a third of a third will survive, much less than what the Pasuk seems to say. So there is a difference of opinion in the Gemara. In this week's Parsha, we know that Noach's sons are mentioned, Shem, Cham, and Yefes. And then the Torah goes on to list the 70 nations that come from Shem, Cham, and Yefes. So the first opinion, Reish Lakish, is that it'll be a third of a third of Shem. Meaning you start with Shem, and you take a third of him, and then a third of that. And he says a third doesn't mean as in one-third, two-thirds, it means the third. Shem, as we'll see in this week's parasha, has five children. It's five children that are listed as in the 70 nations. Elam, Ashur, Arpachshad, Lud, Aram. Elam, Ashur, Arpachshad, Lud, Aram. Those are five. We come from the middle one, the third one, Arpachshad. That's where we come from. Arpachshad has Shelach, Shelach has Aver, and on down until Avraham Avinu. So we come from the third son of Shem. We know we come from Shem. We are Semites. We come from Shem. And Arpachshad, his third son, is the line through which Avraham eventually emerges. So Reish Lakish says that it means the third of Shem, who is Arpachshad, and then a third of Arpachshad will survive. So that even within the line that produces us Jews, only a third of that line will survive. That's the way Reish Lakish understands this pasuk. Rav Yochanan says back to Reish Lakish that that would imply the possibility that some of those who will not survive will be Jews. And he means God-fearing Jews. And he says that's not the case. Therefore, Rav Yochanan says that it means not a third of a third of Shem, but rather a third of a third of Noach. A third of Noach means Shem, as opposed to the other two, Cham and Yefes. And then a third of Shem is the second third. It doesn't mean a third. It means the third child of Shem, which is Arpachshad. So that according to Rav Yochanan, the first third is picking out Shem over the other two, and the second third is picking out Arpachshad over the other sons of Shem. And all the line of Arpachshad will survive, and all the rest will be cut off, will be destroyed. So according to Rav Yochanan, then there is this pasuk is not is not referring to anything that will happen to us, but rather to the rest of the world. According to Reish Lakish, it would threaten us as well. Typically, when you have two opinions, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, the final word is with Rav Yochanan. And that means that it would mean a third of Noach, rather than a third of Shem, which means that the entire line of Arpachshad would survive. That sounds great. It's still difficult to understand, though, because within the line of Arpachshad includes Yishmael, includes Esav, our very close relatives. So they're also included, Moav, Ammon, they're all included in the line of Arpachshad. So I'm not sure how Rav Yochanan would handle that, that it seems that this pasuk would, according to him, would mean the rest of the world is destroyed, but not the real, the enemies of ours that are really closely related through blood. So I'm not sure how he would handle that. According to Reish Lakish, so then the since some of our Pakshad will also be destroyed, that might mean Esav, Yishmael, Moav, Ammon, it might mean those people.
Rabbi, I thought when we learned the story of the Exodus from Egypt, we'll repeat that in the end of days, and four-fifths of them didn't make it out. So, and that was just a bus.
Yeah.
So yeah. How does that work with one-third from Noah's third son?
Yeah.
I mean, those are widely different.
Yeah, that is very different. I agree with you. I didn't think of that. It's a good question. That's a good question. Yeah, unless we say that this pasuk is referring specifically to the rest of the world, not us, that we're on a different, the way we're being going to be treated is a different discussion. And this is really referring to the...
I like the one third better than the four fifth.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. So I don't know. It's a good question. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vehevesis hashlishis ba'esh. So this remaining third, I will bring through the fire, utsraftim, and I will purify them, kitsrof es hakesef, like one purifies silver, uvechantim, and I will test them, which means I will, again, purify them, kivchon es hazav, the way one tests gold, to make sure that it's pure, hu yikra vishmi, he will call out in my name, vani e'ena oso, and I will answer him, Amarti Amihu, I said he is my nation, Vuhu Yomar Hashem Elokai, and he will say, Hashem is my God. The Gemara says about this pasuk, and there's another explanation, but the Gemara says about this pasuk that the famous Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that you are familiar with, but you might not know that it has to do with this pasuk. The Gemara there discusses that on Rosh Hashanah, the books of life and death are open, and that the tzaddikim gemurim, those who are completely righteous, they immediately get inscribed in the book of life, and the rishayim gemurim, those who are completely evil, get inscribed in death, and then you have the beinonim, you have the middle group, which is most everyone. And the Gemara says there that Beis Shammai says that the middle group is this group here. That's the Shlishis. That's the third. That there's a third, and it's two thirds are spoken for. The Tzadikim, the Rishayim. But then a third will be purified in fire. So what he says is that this is not referring to Rosh Hashanah. Rashi over there says specifically, this third and two thirds, this Rishayim and Tzadikim, etc., is referring to the ultimate judgment at the end of time. So that the Tzadikim, they're automatically set up for good, the Rishayim automatically, they're in trouble, and then everybody else, so Beis Shammai says, they go to Gehenim for a short time, and that's what it means, they're purified in fire, they cry out, and then Hashem takes them out and puts them into Gan Eden. That's what Beis Shammai says. Beis Hillel says, no, Hashem is Rav Chesed, and therefore the middle people, they would waver. Where do they go? And then Hashem in His Chesed will move them into Gan Eden without having to go to Gehenna. So the Gemara says, okay, so then what is this pasuk talking about? What does it mean over here that they'll be purified in fire? So Beis Hillel says that's referring to a very small segment of the middle group, meaning the tzaddikim there right away in Gan Eden, the Rishayim there in trouble. Most of the middle ground people would be wavering, and Hashem will push them into Gan Eden, so they will not have to endure the flames of Gehenna. But those who are in the middle ground, who have committed very specific types of sins, for example, the Gemara says, a man in this middle group, this middle category, who never wears tefillin, never does. If you think about it, that's pretty hard to do. It's hard to be in the middle group and never wear tefillin. That's, you know, we're talking about someone who's doing it on purpose. If they don't do it on purpose, then they're not held accountable for it. So we're talking about someone who knows and deliberately does not wear tefillin ever, but they are still in the middle category. That's not so easy to do, to be somehow in the middle category. So that type of person would have to go into Ganem for a short time to be purified before they can go to Gan Eden. So Beis Hillel's version of it is that this pasuk is talking about a very limited part of that shlishis, of that third group, that would have to go to Gehenna for a short time, and then even that group will then call out the name of Hashem, and Hashem says, I will answer him, and I will call him my nation, and he will say, Hashem is my God. So then in the future, more and more people will end up in Gan Eden. Rashi here says that, that in the future, there will be many people who will convert. Many of the non-Jews will convert because they're going to see the truth and then they're going to convert. But as we all know, a convert has to be sincere. And it's very difficult to know whether a person is sincere when everything is going well and going right. When we're on top of the world, so who wouldn't want to convert? This is why they did not accept converts, the Gemara tells us, in the days of David and Shlomo HaMelech. Because when we Jews were on top of the world, militarily, economically, things were great, so of course people wanted to convert, but that doesn't prove that they're sincere. So they were not accepting gerus, they didn't accept converts, except for very limited cases. So, in the Emos HaMashiach, the Gemara says the same thing. Then, once Mashiach comes, then we're not going to accept converts anymore because, of course, they're going to want to convert. That doesn't prove that they sincerely trust and believe in Hashem. But Rashi understands this pasuk is referring particularly to those who wish to convert at that time. And it says that they will go through difficult times. Rashi says, I'll read it to you, that they will endure and carry some of these converts in the pain of the birth pangs of Mashiach, over Melchamos Gog Umagog in Israel, and with the war of Gog Umagog with the Jews. And from there they will be tested, that they are true converts. Meaning, we can't do this when a convert seeks to convert. All we can do is just hope and, you know, see by their behavior whether they are sincere or not. We can't actually put them through a trial. But in that time, Hashem will put some of them through a trial, a real trial, to see if they are sincere or not. And the Rashi says, "Va'az harbe min hamis yahadim tchila." Then many of those who initially wanted to convert, yashuvu lesuram v'ischabru im Gog, they will go back to their wayward ways and connect to Gog, to the enemy. They're not really going to want to convert. But there will be those who will cry out to Hashem even under those circumstances and will remain steadfast, and then they will be accepted as converts. So that even in that time, there will be those who will be able to convert because they will show their true colors when they are tested. But that test can't be administered by human beings because we have no right to put anybody through anything. So only Hashem can do that. So He will give the opportunity to those who want to convert at that time, at least to some of them, to be able to earn their way through, not because they have to, so to speak, pay for it, but because they have to show their sincerity. And this will show their sincerity. So he's understanding that that's what it means over here, that the third, it means a segment of the third, meaning these converts will be put through the fire and they will be purified and they will be tested and they will call out in the name of Hashem. Hashem will say, "You're my nation," and he will say, "Hashem is my God," and they will be accepted as converts. We're going to stop here for tonight. The next pasuk, the next chapter, is the last chapter of Zechariah. Was the haftorah on the first day of Sukkot, I believe. The first day of Sukkot. We just read it recently. And so, Mitzvah Hashem, we will do that next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.